Have you ever found yourself in a romantic relationship, really yearning for that deep connection, that harmony, but instead you feel sort of caught in these confusing, maybe even frustrating patterns,
Oh, absolutely.
like wondering why you react a certain way or maybe why your partner pulls back right when you need them most?
It's something so many people experience. It's really common.
It really is universal. And often the answers, well, they lie in something pretty fundamental, our attachment systems. So today, we're doing a deep dive into this whole fascinating topic. We're drawing a lot from the insights in the book Attached, The New Science of Adult Attachment.
It's a great source.
Yeah. Our mission really is to unpack what these attachment systems are, look at the three main styles, and sort of show how understanding them can be a shortcut almost to less conflict and hopefully more connection in your key relationships.
And it's interesting because it's more than just psychology. What's really compelling is that the science points to these deep biological roots for these patterns. We're not just going to define them. We want to really explore why they matter so much for our well-being, how we, navigate intimacy.
Like a blueprint.
Exactly, like a blueprint embedded right within us.
That idea of a blueprint, it's incredibly powerful, isn't it? Because, like, at its core, this research tells us we humans are biologically driven, driven to seek intimacy, closeness with a significant other. It's not just a nice to have. It's like our brains are actually wired with this sophisticated attachment system, and it's always working.
Constantly creating, monitoring, maintaining these really vital
Sounds
connections.
like an internal guidance system, sort of, for belonging.
Precisely. And if you zoom out a bit, you see this isn't just a modern psych concept. It's actually an evolutionary adaptation. Think about prehistoric times, a lone individual facing huge threats. But a pair or a small group, well, they had a much better chance of survival.
Right, finding food, protecting the kids.
All of that. So, natural selection favored those who could form strong, lasting bonds. Our brains literally developed pathways to support this. When our attachment needs are met, parts of the brain, like the prefrontal cortex, they help us regulate emotions, feel secure.
Right.
But when those bonds feel threatened, the amygdala, more primitive part, can kick in, and that triggers those big fight or flight responses we often see in relationship arguments.
So it's coming from a really deep place.
It's a survival mechanism. It's not a character flaw or weakness.
So this isn't some abstract thing we can just like ignore or switch off. Human attachment is, well, it's just affected biology. We can't escape it. And it's the different ways we learn to deal with this really deep drive for connection. That's what gives rise to our attachment style.
Exactly. And that's the lens we're using today.
A profound lens, yeah. It helps make sense of so much human behavior.
And this lens, it basically categorizes our beliefs and behaviors about intimacy into three main types.
Three core attachment styles. And knowing these is incredibly insightful for, well, understanding relationship dynamics in just everyday life. We're talking secure, anxious, and avoidant. And the stats are pretty interesting too. Just over half, maybe 50%, lean towards secure. Then about 20% are anxious, and roughly 25% are avoidant.
And there's a smaller group too, maybe 5%, who show a mix of anxious and avoidant traits, sometimes called disorganized.
Okay, let's maybe give a quick rundown of each one, just the basics.
Good idea. So, secure attacher. Generally, you're looking at someone nurturing, responsive, warm. They're comfortable with real intimacy. They kind of navigate relationships with this inner calm.
Okay, that sounds nice.
Yes. Then the anxious attacher, they're often preoccupied with the relationship's solidity, always sort of seeking reassurance, maybe fearing their partner might leave. There's often a persistent unease there.
Right, I can picture that.
And finally, the avoidant attacher. They tend to really prioritize independence, self-reliance. They often see intimacy as maybe a threat to their autonomy, so they keep partners at arm's length, sometimes without even realizing it.
Wow, quite different. And what's really eye-opening is how knowing someone's style predicts their behavior, like in almost any partnership situation.
It really does. It's not just about the emotional stuff.
No, it impacts everything. Like imagine a couple talking about money, a big decision. The secure partner might calmly talk options, look for solutions together. The anxious one might need constant reassurance about security or worry nonstop about things going wrong.
And the avoidant one.
Might just shut down. Feel like their independence is under attack by, joint finances. Or they might just keep putting the conversation off.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It shapes everything: budgeting, raising kids, daily chores, even sex and intimacy. These aren't just labels. they genuinely impact the whole fabric of life together.
It's such a comprehensive framework because it describes these ingrained strategies we have for connection. And those strategies then influence, well, all parts of our relational lives.
You can probably start to see yourself, maybe, or perhaps partners you've had, in some of those quick descriptions.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a really powerful moment of realization. Brings so much clarity.
Definitely.
So let's dive a bit deeper. Let's look at the specific features of each style so you can really pinpoint how these show up. Let's start with secure attachment. These folks, they're naturally loving, warm. They genuinely enjoy intimacy, closeness. They don't tend to worry constantly about their relationship.
They take the ups and downs more in stride.
Exactly. They communicate what they want, what they need, pretty easily and directly. No games, no expecting mind reading.
Right.
And crucially, they anticipate and actually enjoy responding to their partner's needs.
Mm.
They see it as mutual, give and take.
It's part of the partnership.
Yeah. Sharing life's wins and, you know, the tough stuff that comes naturally. They build a real sense of team. They're often that kind of emotional bedrock in the relationship.
Then you have the anxious attachment style. Now, people with this style, they deeply crave intimacy and closeness. But their relationships often take up a lot of emotional energy.
Why is that?
Well, usually because there's an underlying fear of abandonment. They often worry their partner doesn't value closeness as much as they do.
Ah, okay.
So this leads to them being extremely sensitive. Even to tiny shifts in their partner's mood or behavior, they might read small cues as like signs of disinterest or rejection.
That sounds exhausting.
It can be.
Yeah.
And they might hesitate to say anything disagreeable, anything their partner might not like, because they fear it could shake things up, destabilize the connection.
So they hold back.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Or they might use what the book calls protest behaviors, like constant texting or maybe withdrawing emotionally or becoming overly dramatic, trying to get attention or reestablish closeness when they feel that distance.
Gotcha. And then the avoidance style. That picture looks pretty different, right?
Very different. For the avoidant attachment style, independence and autonomy are usually preferred over intimacy and closeness. They tend to keep people at arm's length, often have this almost like visceral reaction to feeling smothered or controlled.
Okay.
They generally don't worry too much about their relationship's ending. Rejection might be unpleasant, sure, but it doesn't usually hit them on that deep existential level.
Mm.
And they often struggle to talk about feelings. They might prefer logical chats over emotional ones, and they can get concerned about their partner interfering too much, stepping on their turf.
So how do they handle conflict?
Often by shutting down.
Yeah.
Or physically withdrawing, changing the subject, anything rather than diving into the emotional processing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really stark contrast, shows how varied our basic approaches to connection can be.
It really does. Which brings us to something really thought-provoking. A concept that challenges a lot of what society tells us about relationships.
Ah, yes, the dependency paradox. This raises a huge question. What if the very thing we're often taught to avoid dependency, what if that's actually the key to real independence, real strength?
It's a fascinating reframe.
Totally flips the script.
It really is an aha moment for so many people, because it turns what we thought we knew about healthy relationships completely upside down. The dependency paradox, as Attached lays it out, suggests that letting yourself depend on someone else actually makes you more independent, bolder, braver out in the world.
How does that work?
Well, the idea is when our core emotional needs for security, comfort, love, when those are consistently met in a secure relationship, we become less needy, less anxious,
mm-hmm.
and paradoxically, much more daring.
Because you feel safe.
Exactly. You feel safe enough to explore, to take risks, because you know you have that secure base to come back to.
Which is such a contradiction to so much conventional wisdom, isn't it?
Really?
Like, common beliefs, loads of self-help stuff, tells us. Strive for emotional self-reliance. Focus on your own happiness. Set really strict boundaries. You know, find happiness within yourself first.
Right. We hear that all the time.
But brain research tells a different story. When we're close to someone, our brains are actually wired to crave their emotional support, their physical closeness. If that support is missing or it's inconsistent, our brain reads that as a threat.
A threat.
Yeah. And then it instructs us to pursue that connection at all costs, which might look like anxiously asking for it or angrily demanding it or doing those protest behaviors. We talk about anything to get the partner's attention.
So when those fundamental needs aren't met,
arguments happen, trust breaks down, the relationship gets damaged. It's not a conscious choice to be needy. It's more like a biological imperative kicking in, mm-hmm. seeking connection, seeking security.
Wow. It's incredible to think how deep that drive is.
Right.
And how many of us have been taught a path that kind of goes against our own wiring. Makes you wonder, where did this whole idea about extreme self-reliance even come from?
Yeah, it's interesting historically. This historical shift is really profound. We went from seeing needing others as like a defect to recognizing it's a fundamental human need all through life. But that Western belief in emotional self-sufficiency, especially in relationships, it actually has roots way back in early 20th century parenting books.
Really? Like the 1920s?
Yep. Back then, lots of experts warned against coddling kids, smothering them with too much affection. The thinking was parents should dole out love sparingly to make kids self-reliant, fearless.
Wow, so that was seen as the way to raise strong, independent adults.
That was the idea. And that cultural story, it really stuck around for decades.
So the pendulum swung hard. But then things started to shift, yeah. Like in the 60s.
Exactly. The tide really began to turn then, thanks to psychologists Mary Ainsworth and John Bowlby. Their work was groundbreaking.
What did they find?
They published these paradigm-shifting studies proving how crucial parent-child bonding is, Ainsworth's strange situation experiment especially.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, it clearly showed babies and young kids need consistent attachment figures for way more than just food and shelter. Without that steady, responsive figure, kids had a much higher chance of, well, stunted development physically, emotionally, intellectually.
So it showed, like unequivocally, how vital secure connection is for a child's whole being.
Absolutely. And crucially, Bowlby and Ainsworth, they're rightly seen as the founders of modern attachment theory. They insisted we have these basic attachment needs throughout our entire lives, not just when we're kids.
Okay, that's huge.
It is. And later research backed this up, expanded on it, with a cool nuance for adults. Unlike babies needing that physical presence, adults can often thrive just knowing someone is there for them psychologically, emotionally.
So it's not about constant physical closeness necessarily.
Not always. It's more about that internal security, knowing that dependable, supportive relationship exists, even if your person isn't right there at that moment. It's knowing that bedrock is there. That's what lets us go out and thrive.
This whole deep dive, really, it's not about blame, is it? Not about blaming anyone for past relationship stuff.
No, not at all.
It's about empowerment. Gaining clarity, real clarity, so you can navigate your relationships intentionally. Build the connections you actually want.
Precisely. So how do we apply all this in our daily lives?
Well, the first step, the most critical one, is understanding your own attachment style. Think back on those key features we talked about, secure, anxious, avoidant. Which one really resonates with how you typically show up in relationships?
Yeah, how do you usually seek comfort, express your needs, deal with perceived threats?
And then, just as important, whether you're starting something new or trying to find, you know, more peace in a long-term marriage.
Yeah.
Decoding your partner's style.
Understanding their core beliefs, their attitudes about intimacy, that can save you so much emotional struggle down the line.
Yeah, like if you're on a third date, instead of just asking, does this person like me? Which, okay, is important. Maybe the more useful question is.
Is this person capable of giving me the emotional support and security I actually need?
Exactly. Because honestly, if the answer to that second question is no, the first one, even if it's flattering, it becomes kind of irrelevant for a real fulfilling partnership.
That shift in perspective is massive, transformational.
Well, it really reframes everything.
Yeah.
And if you and your long-term partner have kind of never found that peaceful balance, knowing both your styles can finally show you what's underneath those recurring fights.
Mm-hmm. It helps you see disagreements not just as personal failures, but as these like predictable dances between different attachment strategies.
Right. Like an anxious partner chasing closeness might trigger an avoidant partner's need for space.
Yeah.
And you get stuck in that frustrating chase and retreat cycle.
It becomes clearer.
Yeah. And while you can't know everything your partner feels, their everyday actions, their words, they're really telling indicators of their underlying style.
So pay attention.
Pay attention to how they respond when you reach out for connection, how they handle stress, how they communicate their needs, or, you know, how they don't.
And the ultimate goal here, it's not about diagnosing and sticking labels on people. It's about learning how to adopt the behaviors, the beliefs of the secure attachment style.
So you can learn it.
Absolutely. This understanding empowers you to make your relationships more fulfilling, regardless of your starting point or your partner's. It's about personal growth, cultivating those secure interactions. You can earn that security. It's within reach.
And that really is the incredible value of this deep dive, isn't it? Understanding attachment styles gives you such a powerful framework for self-awareness, for building healthier relationship patterns.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. Partners who consistently meet our basic attachment needs that deep desire for security, comfort, love.
Mm.
They genuinely give us the courage to go out and thrive.
They become that secure base.
Yeah, allowing us to be bolder, more creative, more resilient. But partners who don't meet those needs, they can actually hold us back, drain our energy, even negatively affect our physical and mental health.
It has real consequences.
It does. But the good news is, with this knowledge, you have the power to seek out or to actively cultivate those truly supportive, empowering connections.
It's definitely a continuous journey, understanding ourselves and others. But hopefully this deep dive gives you a really useful map for that journey.
Absolutely. So considering everything we've talked about today, you know, from our biological wiring for connection to that surprising dependency paradox, how might you approach a challenging conversation maybe? Or even a new connection differently now? Armed with this knowledge that dependency can actually be a path to greater independence, greater courage.
What new questions might you ask? What behaviors might you notice with fresh eyes?
Lots to think about. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep exploring, keep learning, and here's to more fulfilling connections.